Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella, with my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, Will Coleman. Will, how's it going?
Howdy, Mike. Just running the marathon one step at a time and looking forward to learning from our guest today. Our guest today is Chris Jackson. Chris Jackson, already messing up there. He's the principal and managing partner of Sharpline Equity. He's been in commercial real estate for just over 10 years now. Prior to that, he worked in informational technology and was big on building systems and very involved in the tech space. And anytime I speak to Chris about debt, I realize how much more I have to learn about debt. So it's always a pleasure speaking with you, Chris. How's it going today?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So Chris, one of the things that our money mixer, you kind of teased to the attendees, is that you are the follow-up king when it comes to brokers, deals, etc. Any privy to that information and how you systemized it and why?
Yeah. I would say that at first it was all just based on instinct. I felt like I knew when to follow up, and it started to become unmanageable, as you can imagine, with everybody that you want to follow up from, even the operational side of following up from getting quotes from vendors and contractors. And I think that I had tenacity in that regard for my programming days. I was always a great follow-up. I just had to get the answer. Like, I wasn't afraid to call people. If it was a day that somebody didn't answer my email, they're getting a call. And it was from a programmer, which is kind of odd, but I always got my answer. I took that into the real estate space, and it just kind of fit. I guess I was more of a salesperson than I realized. It was more operational property management follow-up, but I used it in sales. So I had the instinct, but I started to need to systematize it. And the way I systematize it is I use tools like Trello.
Gotcha.
I have columns that I create, and I have all the different people I've reached out to and I know I need to follow up with. And I put them on timelines, and I move people through various columns so that when I feel the instinct is there, sometimes I put reminders, sometimes I don't. I'll override my calendar reminders. It's not that organized and beautiful like that to perfection, but I'll go and say, I haven't spoken to this person. It's time to get to talk with them. And after I talk with them again, they move to another place. And I know that I stand out that way. I know that I've gotten at least three deals that I would not have gotten other than being at top of mind.
And then what about when you're taking over an asset? Like, let's say you just closed a deal, the next following 3 to 4 months, how do you communicate to brokers? I mean, maybe you are still able to take down a deal right after that, but let's say you're taking down a deal that's going to take a considerable amount of time. Are you still following up with brokers and saying, you know, hey, we're going for this asset right now, but you know, down the road, or are you acting like you're still buying? How do you kind of structure that?
I act like I'm buying all the time because everything takes so much longer than you think. If you say, I'm just gonna chill for 3 months, like I gotta, and usually it's not chill, it's I wanna focus on this other thing that needs my attention. That is actually the right thing to do, but it's the wrong thing to do in the macro of your pipeline, because you basically just put your timeline 6 months out. If you'd like the next deal to show up in 3 or 4 months, you got to run it in parallel to just have the conversations going. Like, it takes 4 weeks to get into contract sometimes. Everybody's like, we get into contract in a week. That doesn't happen for us. So
it doesn't for us either.
Like, what did they say to those last revisions? And it's like, it's been a week. What's going on? Like, it takes a long time in commercial real estate. So I encourage everybody to, I keep it moving. Now, I wouldn't be able to take on a new project if it was like, oh, can you close in 30 days? I'd be like, oh crap.
Yeah.
But I would be forthcoming and say, no, I'm probably not the right fit on this one, but that hasn't really happened.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more with that. Reading Fanatical Prospecting was a phenomenal book of just constantly you have to prospect, because like you said, that lead window just takes longer and longer. And then you're not top of mind, which is the key with the brokers. I mean, I use a different system with Asana just to set up the reminders, but it's coming top of mind, right? Constantly being, I've got to a point where I, when before this podcast, I was thinking of, I kept calling brokers every 3 weeks to the mm-hmm. point where the broker goes, I'll let you know, Mike, when there's a deal. And I'm like, all right, cool. I'll call you in 3 weeks. And they're just like, yeah. Oh my God. So it just, once you stop one thing, the machine stops, your prospecting's done, and you're just in a quicksand, and you got to just work just as hard to get back to where you were a few months ago.
So what I also find about fanatical prospecting, I gotta read this, but I feel like that's my ethos, is I feel like it gives me a mental advantage during the properties that are in contract. Because if you're in contract on a property, there are things that can happen on a property in contract where you have to negotiate with strength and leverage. And if you don't have anything else and it's twiddling thumb world, I don't care who you are going to negotiate with less strength. If you feel like you've always got pipeline, you're just like, I'm not wavering on this. And your deal can fall apart and you're like, I'm cool with that. And the seller can feel it in your voice. And that's why you always have to have new things so that you feel like the next thing is coming and you're not like Tommy boying this like one thing. Oh gosh, we're going to lose it.
So to use a probably a poor metaphor, it's similar to when like you have a girlfriend and then you go to the bar, all the girls are all sudden, you have much more confidence talking to other girls. Similar when you have multiple
girls. Your current girlfriend's going to love that.
Well, I really don't have one. Maybe a reason for it.
But no, I think that's a good point, because then too, if you think about it, like Chris's point, if this is the deal, this is our one deal a year, or this is the deal we're doing right now, and you stop, then there could be other phenomenal deals that are in the pipeline that you just found out of, or get even too. It shows to the other brokers that you're credible, that because you got something under contract. And it's not saying don't force things into contract just to get it under contract, right, but just making sure like within your realms, it's under contract for the right reasons, for the right price for you and your team, but don't just get stuff under contract just to get it under contract.
From a broker's perspective too, for their time management, they're absolutely going to put you in a bucket of, if I was only doing one a year, they'd be like, Chris is the one a year guy.
Yeah.
Like, and like, oh, I didn't know you do more. Like that you will 100% get put in that bucket.
Yeah. That's good point as well. Cause, and brokers take mental notes too, of just what you're looking for. And that's just another, people will talk about vintage, class, median income and all that stuff, but the one deal a year, it's not good or bad. It's just what you and your team can do. So if you can show that you're still looking, then that you just put yourself in that other realm and sphere.
Yeah, that you're always the active buyer.
Yeah.
You move up through the list.
Yeah. Always top of mind. So the next thing I want to kind of ask you about is your asset management and the systems you have in place for your asset management. I mean, we know you're in a couple different markets and you leverage third party management companies, but kind of how does that look managing from, you know, a different state and the systems in place for your asset management?
Yes. I mean, we've had to learn how to manage from a distance quite effectively because we don't invest where we live. And also we've worked with so many different third party property managers that we've just gotten good at what works and what doesn't in the style. You know, you have some of the basic stuff like calls every week in the beginning. That's just a basic for us. But we're high usage of technology, lots of Google Sheets, Trello, Asana style. I mean, either one. I don't get into the nuance of which one is better for whom, but like use something like that. Have a task tracker for all your projects and each of the properties, and then for the property manager, for you. You should be tracking all those tasks. But we're very big on our Monday morning reports. You know, there's six disciplines to asset management. You have delinquency management, you have renewal management, marketing, basically your tenant marketing, community development. You have your on-site PM management or self-management. So you have to manage the manager. That's a discipline. And then you have reputation management. All these silos take different disciplines, and they have to be a part of on your hit list of each week. Sometimes you don't spend a lot of time on one versus the other, but you need to move pawns in each one of those. Like, for instance, reputation management is going to help community development. If you see that you got a negative review, you should attack it with proactivity and have your systems in place to have access to your reviews and some sort of system to make sure that you're seeing when a negative review comes online. We're not perfect. We'll go 2 or 3 days sometimes and be like, oh gosh, there was a negative review. But now you have to handle it with professionalism and grace. And then you can also add some proactive tips, like say you do a really fast maintenance request and you're getting the response from a resident that they're very happy. You should ask them for a positive review. And then that's going to help your marketing efforts, because that's how people view communities. And then you're also developing the community by having better residents.
Yeah, that's
there's a lot of systems in each one of these. I'll give out a RAND podcast only tip that we've done.
Breaking news, guys! Buckle up, get your pens and pencils ready.
Yeah, it's sick. Go buy a Google phone for the property. I mean, you're buying properties that are multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. Go pay $40 for a cell phone. Set it up. Create a Gmail account, connect it to Google Drive that you set up, so that when somebody takes a picture, it auto saves to a drive to you. Have it connected to the Wi-Fi of the leasing office, and have your staff use that to take photos all the time and videos. And then when you have your staff say, I don't want to use my data, they just can go take pictures and videos and they don't have to do anything, and it auto loads to your Google Drive.
That's
and
awesome.
Everything's timestamped.
So it's a cell phone that you leave on the property, or like the property manager will have it and carry around.
And then you connect it to Wi-Fi. Don't even worry about cell data.
Because what you can do is it'll automatically sync the Google photos, and that way, like Chris said, it's timestamped, and then you have a shared photo album with the entire crew. So for marketing, maintenance, etc.
You take away even the FaceTime piece of like my phone's not working. You also take away the piece of, I took those pics. Did you? Like, it's timestamped. Actually, even if you didn't go next to the Wi-Fi, it's timestamped of when you took it. And you can also do videos where you say, show me the unit. And you just show the video, you show the unit and make it not stop. Show me the unit, walk in. How's everything going?
Evil genius in the lair. I love it.
Yeah, it sounds like micromanagement, but it's about accountability. And I just don't see why, if we're providing the software there and like not making it on the person that's there, like it's actually just ease. It actually just creates ease of communication. We just started doing it. It's working great. It's not easy. It's not going to be like the perfect solution, but it allows you to be present. Now, the one thing is, you got to show up. I see too many investors today just rocking the super virtual train with coronavirus. Obviously, that is going to be the right thing to do for certain people, but you got to show up. There's no way a phone's going to show you the punch list. You can't see if it's got the feel of the punch list being perfect.
Yeah. No, I think that's a big thing. Pretty much kind of that really resonated with our system of the Net Promoter Score, which is 2-question surveys to all of our residents and even investors on a scale of 0 to 10, how likely are you to live at a RAND property? And then the second question is why? So I think Chris's point of the accountability is, in the end, we want to have the highest Net Promoter Scores possible. So how do we do that? We have to have transparent communication, look, feel of excellence on top of that operational excellence. So if you can't systemically upload a photo to Google Photos and the time you're doing it, you're not going to do the other things correctly to get that high Net Promoter Score. So accountability, I think I always look at asset management as accountability. That's the word, because you're keeping the managers involved, because you have to report back to the investors. So you think you're always like just overseeing the property managers, but you have to look back and then look at your investors with a serious face and tell them what happened, because you're accountable of what happened. So it's not an easy thing. It's always simplified as manage the managers, but really, like you said, the 6 pillars that you mentioned, reputation and leasing and marketing, those are instrumental and all play a huge part into having a highly functioning property that promotes the community and makes sure that it betters the community as well.
We as owners are also accountable to our employees, if you will. If they're in third party management, we consider them like partners, employees. They ask us to do things. Like on each of the calls, we have a task list for us. And if something happens where you didn't do it that week, or it was kind of like you missed it. You gotta meet a culpa and let them know, like, I missed it. It's on me. I'll get to it. And they got to see how you react as an owner to missing something, because you are going to miss something. And I think that creates a culture of allowing somebody on site to be like, I totally missed that. And it's not like the end of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And we even did a podcast a couple of weeks ago called Keeping Everyone Accountable. It was specifically on that, on asset management, going through like, you know, what we do to track certain things and how we keep everyone accountable. So definitely important.
Yeah. And I think it just, do you follow like a track, like when you do yours, do you do like a traction style, like L10, or is it kind of just the sharp line, kind of here are the bullet points to make it happen this week?
Well, I think it's probably like a style of L10. I don't follow the traction piece 100%, although I should, and we'll probably grow into that. Our style is we take notes on every call. They get written up and sent to everybody. So on Thursdays are our asset management day. On Fridays, they get sent to everybody on the team, partners, and whoever's on site. And then on Wednesday and sometimes Thursday morning, an agenda is set up recapping what has been completed from the last week's notes and then what we should talk about, what we've learned. Obviously, things happen in that week. What are we talking about today? And that is the guide for the asset management call, so everybody's on the same page.
Who normally takes the notes?
That would be Nick currently.
Okay.
Shout out to Nick.
It was Krista for a long time. She was not able to keep up, obviously. I'm a terrible note taker, so don't even give it to me. But Krista was. Nick's doing it now, and Krista reviews his notes to see if he's not understanding the nuance because of just our experience level. So she gets to review, and she usually creates the agenda. But I could see Nick moving into agenda creation soon.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so you're someone who's pretty involved in technology, and property management is a field that isn't really, taken advantage of technology for the most part, at least in my experience. I mean, do you see any opportunities? I don't know if you guys are, it sounds like you are implementing stuff on the small scale, but do you see like huge opportunities in the future for technology and property management to kind of coexist a bit better?
Like 6,000,000,000%. Yeah, like I think there is tech, but I think tech currently in property management to those companies that are using it is almost like too overwhelming for everybody on the team. They're not using it correctly and to the full capabilities of it. We actually in quite a few properties, Neil Bawa does a really good job of he showed me, kind of some things that he was doing on the resident marketing. We started doing some things on a different property in a different way, but like to take over some more of the resident marketing in new marketing tracks, I think a lot of the property managers are I think that is an area I just don't get. Everybody's just like flyers still, which work, but like, where's Facebook Marketplace? Where are all these places that you can push? You have to process larger amount of crap leads too, where it's like people faking that they're kind of interested in your property. So you have to spend a lot of human capital and time to sift through that. How do you do that effectively at scale? And when you do that though, which we've successfully been able to do, we have competitors that are like really complaining about demand. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Even during Corona times, when there are times when the eviction moratoriums and you're working with residents, I feel confident of demand levels that allow us to feel confident as operators. Like, we know that we will fill this unit. So that is a very different ethos than, oh my gosh, like, we don't know who's going to rent this up next. But you're processing a lot of leads, and current property managers cannot do it.
Yeah. And it brought back to the deal flow of like, if you're sitting on your hands, I go, I hope someone rents it. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we've used a tool called Lisa with Appfolio that for some of our properties works phenomenally. It's like an AI bot going through proving they're credible. Some properties it works great. We'll get like 100 leads a week. Other properties it falls flat on the face, and Facebook Marketplace has been our answer. So it's pretty interesting to see on the case by case basis, but I think being on the pulse of those marketing. And I think an important measure too, as an operator, if you're not measuring it, you can't get better at it. So if you don't, if you're kind of like, I don't even know the demand piece or where our marketing lies, measure it first, and then you can see how you can improve and really get that through. So if you're kind of like, I don't even know what their guys are talking about, measure first.
Yeah, I mean, with there are times actually, and this is where it takes patience, where you want to throw every option out there in marketing, and I've said no. I'm like, but like, but we have to rent up, and it's like, we are hurting ourselves for a month, but we have to try one thing. Don't change too many levers. Do the next. Fall flat on your face for 2 weeks. Go do something else. Because if you, oh, it didn't work, and then you do something else, all you do is just like, you might as well spend $2,500 a month on marketing to do everything. And then it's just not, it's untenable.
And that's where kind of, I think the marketing trap is you got to do everything. And then that's where they latch on and they're like, see, it worked because we did everything.
Right. So. And here's something that's interesting when you do too much too. You have to analyze resident user patterns now too, because you could send out three different things out there that are working, but the users are just seeing branding of your name of your apartment complex and then typing in Google and then calling the phone number. Your source was something different, but you're saying it was Google. So now you're like, let's go do Google AdWords. That wasn't it.
Yeah.
They just knew your name and they typed it in Google. So you have to have a way to like make sure that you're extracting that from potential prospects as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the 80-20 rule, right? Where if 80% of your results come from 20% of your effort, if you can figure out what that 20% of your effort is, put all of your effort into that 20% and it, you know, will significantly increase the results.
I also think that apartment complexes that are basically their businesses, their communities, yep, we even as operators now are not doing enough to brand them correctly. Like why aren't we doing like community videos that are on Google right now that's having a nice interview to talk about the community, so that when somebody shows up and looks at the reviews, they're like, what's that video? Mm. Oh, I like that place. That looks nice there.
Yeah.
Well, and also I think too, a big piece is the reputation that you had on the pillar, like the reputation, the engagement, like you're just documenting each part and just, I don't want to say broadcasting, but you're putting it up there so people can see like how Googleable is our community. What are we doing to showcase that community? And just, I think that's a kind of just, like I said, the little things that you don't think about because you're like, I just got to get it rented. Well, take a step back, look macro. Yeah. How do I make an impact?
How do I make, like, do I have videos on the destination website of the complex? Does it match up in sort of the sales lead flow of the experience? We as operators and owners of buildings don't think like marketers, branders. We need to.
Yeah. No, it's 1,000% true. And that's why I feel like we're redeveloping our entire website for all of our companies just to be more forefront, more customer journey experience. Gino, that's like his baby for all of our projects this quarter is the customer experience. And I mean, even on our investor side, right, we'll send statements, but not everyone's Excel or PDF savvy. So me doing a little Loom, going through the ins and outs of what happened and just showcasing that as little bit of factor, but it helps people exponentially more, and that touch point's more unique than others.
It's like the Gary Vaynerchuk principle, which I've been trying to follow. You know, he's like, we need to be a little more Flintstones in a Jetson era with our distance of our phone. You need to go back to the Flintstones of providing that. I mean, right now in Corona, it sounds bad, but like the human touch experience. Like we're getting away from that, and the pendulum's going where we can do business virtual, but the winners will figure out how you stay virtual as much as possible, but create the human experience where it's meaningful and authentic throughout the entire every step. We have to work at that. That's a never ending mission.
Yeah, no, I think that's huge, and especially now in the world of email blasts, and we did a workshop with Joey Coleman. Is like, how many emails you just get blasted of like, here's what we're doing, here's this, here's that. But it's just like, if you did like a little video of like, oh, hey, Chris, just wanted to give you a report one-on-one. Like it takes more time and it's scaling the unscalable, but it's that little nuance of that personal touch. Like, oh, these guys care about me and really care about my update and my pulse.
We did a turkey giveaway last year where we did a raffle. You needed to be current, and you were put in a raffle. And I forget how many turkeys we gave out, but it was expensive and we did it. And we took pictures with the winners. And then we sent that out to the investors and also the community newsletter. And why were the collections one of the best that those following months? I mean, there's a little bit of almost like, I'm thinking that to myself right now, like, what are we doing? Like, why aren't we doing that more?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little like thing.
You get so busy in everything else, but you had these 20% things that created 80, and yet you're like, oh, like, I'm just saying it to myself right now. I'm like, I'm going to write a note. Like, we got to do more of that. What are we doing? Yeah.
No, it's interesting as more and more capital gets pushed towards apartments. Like, yes, there is an argument to be said that has increased rent, which is causing a rent crisis, but the overall care and how much effort is put into, you know, taking care of tenants, doing community events, making sure the plumbing, the major capital expenditure items have been taken care of. Like, the improvement of operations has, in my eyes, significantly increased for Class B and Class C apartments because of the amount of capital shifting towards it. You know, obviously there's a balance act that you have to keep between, you know, rents and income and things like that. But it's, I mean, just hearing how you're handling your business, how we're handling ours, I think that's an argument to be said there.
And now we're in a recession, and you have some demand from would-be homeowners, even though there was lower levels, but increasing. You have almost that dream being taken away again. Mm-hmm. So now it's us. We have an opportunity to serve up fantastic product for these people to be their home. And that's really important. And you can provide a great product to that marketplace that will fetch a premium. And premium doesn't necessarily have to be 1800. It can be the market is 900, but because of your branding and community efforts, and it's still affordable, you can charge $1,000 as a premium.
Yeah. It's that goodwill piece. In accounting, we call it goodwill, but it's something that I think on a spreadsheet, it's hard to replicate when you're underwriting of like goodwill rent premium, $100 a unit, because it's Sharpline or Ram Partners but I think it's just knowing that you'll always put people first. These are homes, not tenant. These are homes, not apartments or not units. These are residents. Like, I think those are the things that don't come across in a spreadsheet that you know that you can elevate the community, the submarket, and just really make an impact.
I'm sure you guys are the same way, but when I, you know, when we scan our reviews and you do see a negative review, it sucks. Like, it's just like, I thought we were doing everything right. Like, man, that's the perception. Like,
yeah.
And then you have the positive ones to counteract. But, you know, as an owner that cares, which, you know, a lot of people think that that's not the case. Like, you see those reviews and you're like, oh, what did we do wrong? Like, let's do it better.
And so, go ahead. Sorry.
No.
I was just saying, it's honestly almost like an opportunity when you get a bad review, because you have an opportunity of what did they not like, what caused them to leave that review. Now we can put systems in place to prevent that from happening again. So it's like, it does hurt us to see that. And it you know, we do care about the property, so it's difficult to read that, but it gives us an opportunity to further serve that specific resident.
And you can, that's also reputation management as one of the tactics that you can do is when a granular pieces is, if you do get a negative review, if you wait too long, you lose the opportunity, if you did react quickly, to go to that resident and say, where do we mess up? Like, where did this go wrong? Is there any miscommunication? We've had negative reviews where we go to the resident within 24 hours and they've taken it down.
Yeah. Well, I've heard a lot of stories in property management where they just destroyed us. And then within 12 to 24 hours, they're like, hey, what happened? They're like, we're sorry. I just had a really bad Monday. You know, I just need to be heard. It's like the trickle down of just yelling at. And then they turn around and we're like, hey, we appreciate it. And just thank you.
I mean, like, we're in a time of uncertainty. So we have to be sensitive to that also as owners of that. They're stressed. It's hard to predict the future. So that needs to be part of our ethos and just working with our residents.
Yeah. One thing we did is that because of the toilet paper rush, we actually gave a little roll of toilet paper with a note saying, during these crappy times here at Ram Property Management, we're here for you. And we were just so much communication on, you know, stimulus or assistance and 411.org, any resource to the resident, we're here. Because I know if you just sat in your apartment and watched the news, you'd be pulling your hair as anyone. So it's just, if you could be that rock to your residents, that just helps everyone moving forward.
Actually thinking about right now as we're talking about this, because it's almost like a brainstorming session of good ideas. Like, are we doing enough to reach out to, say, some of the residents that they've lost their job, and maybe they're not as communicative? Are we doing enough to really find out, you know, what kind of job are they looking for? Like, I know it's not our responsibility necessarily, but couldn't it be as community developers to like we heard there's jobs over here. Have you gone?
Yeah.
Like make it easier to find where jobs are. I mean, I don't feel like we're doing that enough.
Yeah, we didn't advertise it just due to the sensitivity behind it, but on one-on-one calls, we've let our residents know certain employers hiring. So, but that's, I mean, with LinkedIn and stuff like that, those could be quick fixes. And even then, I think our property management group's having like a virtual career fair as well. So those are all like little things that you could do, is just calling around and like who's hiring. And then it's a couple, like you said, the community developers piece.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the value in today with is access to so much information is not like everybody has access to information, but it's not some like you need to be able to aggregate it together and like present it, because it's actually difficult to consume the amount of information out there. You can lose track of where to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think kind of our last point, Chris, I know we're just riffing really well on the management side, but I just know with you personally, you've done a lot of deals in a lot of different markets. And we just want to know kind of the niche markets that you approve of. What are the tools to help you find these markets? You don't have to say names, but we just really want to make sure, how are you keeping pulse on markets that I feel like not many people have heard of or have spotlight on?
So you can go on my website, sharplineequity.com/resources, and you can see some of the tools that I use. You know, I do like secondary and tertiary markets more these days for a lot of the things that I put out online with my content about flight from density and migration patterns from large cities. I think the secondary and tertiary cities.
Yeah, do you want to speak on that quickly? Just your thoughts on
the great exodus, as you call it?
The great relocation.
Relocation, that's it.
Yeah, people are, you know, it's becoming more of a virtual world. I think you're going to see it come back a bit more for the importance of obviously human to human contact and relationship building. But you have, I think that we were in quarantine for so long that you just, it wasn't like a 9/11 where the 9/11 event, you had like a death and then people had to mourn it and they had every day to mourn it and heal. With the pandemic, it was, you're going to be in quarantine, not like we live, and we're going to remind you of it every day for 4 months. That changes who you are. Yeah. And if you're in a stage in your life where you have opportunities where you can leave, people are, and they're gone. They're out of there. I don't think, whenever I say this too, I get all the urbanites that are like, dude, the New York City's not going to die. And I'm like, who said that? I didn't say that New York City was going to die. It's not going to be a desert. New York City is going to be amazing. But it's going to take a long time to become amazing again. And I think it's also going to allow for a timeline of the fact that we're experiencing re-quarantining and rolling quarantines for people that are like, I don't want to be through this again. Where else in the United States can I go? And oh, by the way, 70% of the company said it was cool that I could just live wherever I want. So now, and now when you have schools not going back and all this, you're getting a lot of parents like families, well, why am I moving to an expensive school district? I can just go live here. If I'm going to do virtual learning, I'll just go buy the house for half the price and the school taxes aren't high. It's just creating a whole different new wipe the whiteboard clean allowance for thinking and moving around the country. But you also want urban, you want to scratch the urban itch but you don't want it to be high dense. So there are secondary and tertiary cities that offer that. Now, let's, once again, everybody takes my statements and goes super binary. Tertiary. Like, oh my gosh. Like, you have to watch out for tertiary. You can't just say tertiary and win. You have to make sure that there is growth in the tertiary. It doesn't mean population growth has to be like this. It just means what's happening in this tertiary city. Is it near another secondary city? Did it do well in the last recession? What's happening now with new headquarters? What type of jobs are there? You know, what are its politics? Everybody kind of gets all.
You mean it depends on population growth, job growth, economic development, like the key fundamentals?
Key fundamentals, but everybody kind of uses that and then sees a market like this and it's been stable and maybe it's going up a little bit and they're like, well, not enough population growth. See you later. And yeah. I'm like, sweet, where's that market? Cool.
Yeah.
Like 30 minutes away, there's a car manufacturing plant and the downtown's super rad. Okay. Like, are the rents low for the income? Yeah. Like that is a big piece right now. There's some certain areas of the country where it's like the average household income of the area is like 65 grand and the rents are 900. Mm. Okay. Like if you serve up a 1970 product that's been redone, they can't afford 1200. And like you look for things like that. And that's not a formula piece that like I only look at certain places because it has that delta, but all these factors feed my instinct of if we should hit this market or not.
It's the story behind it. They each have a piece, right? There's, you might, on one market, one factor over is like, oh, wow. But then there's three others that drag it down. So it's the overall, a mentor mindset. It's the painting of a market. Is the market, some market, property, and the financials. Does it all check out and make sense and make a good painting?
I think you should look for areas that are, what is it called? The last mile delivery. Like when for the logistics of Amazon. Like you're looking for commerce, logistics tracks, because you're seeing huge industrial parks being built to handle warehousing so that they can decrease the speed of last mile delivery to enhance the customer experience for all types of goods now. And that's going to create jobs. Then somebody's going to say, oh, but that's going to automate, but not for a while.
Yeah.
Still need the human element to handle all that logistics. So those are the areas that I think you should pay attention to.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's so much about just not taking the easy route. I mean, take some time and look at markets and figure out why the numbers are, you know, like you said, the story behind it. And it's a lot of people, I mean, I've probably been guilty of it as well, living in Dallas, just saw the population and job growth. I was like, all right, there. Right. Rather than taking time and really looking at, you know, different markets and understanding the details and the economics of that specific market.
You also have, I think when you paint with too broad strokes right now, with too broad of a brush, you have huge opportunity cost right now, because you can already have a low cap rate market that seems like it's at its peak, but it's going to become a destination from migration from other parts of the country it's never seen before. How is that market going to crash? Like, I just think that when you start painting with too broad, like you're not thinking enough.
Yeah.
What's the supply? What's coming online? What kind of jobs are there? How much migration is there? What are the politics? Like, you need to be thinking about all these things and not just be like, cap rate's going up. The more people that do that, the more deals I'm going to get. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's important to note too, like the amount of deliveries, because we were looking at a deal and it's just, I think in the next couple of years, there's going to be six properties built around it. So if you had a 70s product, how are you going to compare to brand new A+? Or if you're looking at a smaller unit, how are you going to compare to the amenities to the race to the A+? So I think that delivery piece is a huge part that I think
Talk about that example. Let's actually use that. That's a great example, because I was just thinking the way you were thinking, like that 19 for a moment, I was like, 1970 product, how can you compete? But what happens if if that area gets so much demand that it becomes the A-class hotspot, that now that 1970s thing is the affordable option compared to the A-class? And if you put the right amount of work into the 1970s, you can raise the rents because it's a hotspot area.
Yeah, Mike, what would you say to that?
Man, I think Chris took my job as the host of the podcast. No, but I mean, that's true too. I mean, it's all about, yeah. I mean, that's a good point, especially in.
No, you have to think about it. You're right. Because you should worry about it.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of moving pieces in real estate. Yeah.
I don't know the exact quote or who says it, but it's like risk is defined as the number of things that could happen or something. It's something along those lines. So it's like trying to understand the risk of an investment involves trying to understand what could happen with that investment, which exactly what you're saying. You have to consider that happening, and kind of walk through and attempt to predict the future as best as possible by analyzing and thinking about different factors. So, yeah.
In an area of Atlanta, I saw a group about 2.5 years ago that probably was called very crazy for doing it. 1960s building, but really great location. Rents were about 1400, or in the area they were about 900 at that time, but other A-class started going up and rents went to 2000. This group went in and paid like 85 a door for this. And it was like, you guys are nuts. They put 20 a door into it, made it look beautiful. All in 100 a door, rents 1400.
Wow.
20 a door, so much.
Worth 140 a door.
Wow.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's somewhat speculative, but there was a genius behind the view of where the area was going and the quality of product delivered to meet demand.
Yep. So, go ahead.
No, I just to say, Atlanta is like a whole other realm of just like the sub-markets. We did a meetup there, and it was just, we're not as familiar with the Atlanta market, but it's just the development, the ecosystem, each part.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like a Chicago, New York, of like each market, like Chicago as a whole and New York as a whole. But then you go into like that specific like block and neighborhood. It's just like a whole other realm of what's there.
Well, what's happening is Atlanta's being called a secondary city. And I think that that's false. Like I view Atlanta as almost a primary city right now.
And I've never.
Yeah, I would have as well.
I would have primary for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta's like bustling, and you're right. It's also not geographically constrained, so it radiates outward. So yeah, it's a lot of submarkets to know.
Plus, yeah. The largest airport in the country helps.
It does.
All right,
but not when it's closed down.
Touche.
I hate to start wrapping this up, but it has kind of turned into a brainstorming session, which is.
Oh, yeah, sorry, guys. I can talk.
Yeah, we can go for.
Way to go, Will.
We could go for another hour here, but before we wrap it up and go into our pro tip, let's take a moment to hear from our sponsors.
Gino, I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to take their multifamily investing business to the next level. I know that you've been hard at work helping Jake and Gino students do just that using our framework. Can you explain to the listeners how they can get our help?
Guys, we've been hard at work growing our community of like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been nothing short of incredible. We're looking to grow this amazing group. What we're looking for is those who want to follow our proprietary framework that we've created. Buy right, manage right, and finance right. Leverage our connections, education, and mentorship as ways to take your business to the next level.
So if you're interested in finding out more about how you can become a part of our amazing community, apply to work with us at jakeandgino.com/apply.
And we're back. So Chris, since Will's wrapping us up, what is the one investor pro tip you have for our listeners today?
So this is going to be more of a mindset thing, but it is an investor tip, pro tip. I didn't grow up as like a optimistic person, great family, lots of love, but not an optimistic person. I would say that I have forced myself to lead with optimism. It like force yourself to get into an optimistic framework, and that shapes how you think through solutions.
Boom. Is there any way any tips on how to get into that mindset, whether your experience or just a book example?
Sure. I mean, for me, in the morning, it starts with prayer, but that's not for everybody. So that gets me into that mindset, but that leads me into more of meditative state to just be thinking, just to quiet your mind and to really start coaching your brain to have positive self-talk. I think a lot of people can resonate with the fact that most thoughts for non-positive thinkers leans towards negative and negative self-talk. And you actually have to force yourself to be, call it 51% fan, 49% critic, and then things start to change for the better.
Yeah, it's definitely powerful. I just read The Secret, so it kind of aligns with that. I keep bringing it up as a joke. But and then real quickly as well, I wanted to ask about your deal analyzer. I haven't used it myself, but I've heard very great things about it so far. I think my cat.
For those listening, two thumbs up from this guy, from Ramp Partners.
So kind of just briefly talk about that and what makes it unique.
You can get it at themultifamilyanalyzer.com, www.themultifamilyanalyzer.com. It's called Synthesis, the analyzer by syndicators for syndicators, but it is for other people, if you're doing JVs or self-ownership, it has the capability to have partnerships and self-owner distributions types. But what I always found with that was lacking in analyzers was you couldn't really model heavy lifts or even just heavy value adds when there's a refinance component and you get some of the CapEx rehab money financed. You just kind of were guessing, and a confused mind says no. So I think there's a lot of people just running away from things they don't understand. And they also run away from deals or opportunities where maybe you do have to bring on a partner or two, JV, syndication, mini syndication, whatever. And you don't know what the distributions are going to be. So you run away from it because you don't know how to model it. And that's what Synthesis does.
Yeah. No, it's a great tool. I've been running it parallels with mine, and it's super easy. And for those who don't have questions on it, Chris has a lot of content with it that goes with it to make sure answers any and all questions about it. And Chris is always a phenomenal resource. So I'm sure if it's not in those videos or other content, he will happily take care of it.
And if anyone did have questions about you or for you, probably a better way to say it.
Both are good.
what would be the best way to reach out to you and to get in contact with you personally?
So I'm pretty accessible online. Probably the easiest is go to sharplineequity.com and just hit the contact button, and we get those messages that come in. I am on Facebook. We run a private Facebook community for multifamily called Multifamily Unveiled, and I'm pretty active there. I'm also active within the Wibow Profits community, which has been wonderful over the years, and I love being part of the RAND community.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chris. And there you have it. Another phenomenal episode, jam-packed. We could have done another hour, but yeah.
What is that, an hour? Holy cow.
If anyone has any questions, please reach out to Chris. Or if you have questions for us, reach out to us at info@randcre.com. And until then, we'll see you next week.
Thank you, guys.